Hello, and welcome to another episode of Forced Proximity. I'm Jonathan, and with me is my romance author wife, Megan Montgomery, who can be found at Megan Montgomery Writes on Instagram. This week is our final movie for Moviesode March. And
is it?
Yeah, isn't it?
No.
Oh, no, it's not. We have one more.
We have another one.
No, second to last movie for Moviesode March. Because I'm going back to work tomorrow after spring break. So in my head, March is over.
March better not be over because I am going to be finished writing my book on the last day of March. And I need all of those 11 days that I have left.
Well, if you clicked on the show, you know the title is How to Marry a Millionaire. I don't know why it's How to Catch a Millionaire.
How to Catch a Thief, maybe you're thinking?
No.
Okay.
I don't know why.
That's another old movie. 50s movie.
Well, How to Marry a Millionaire.
Millionaire.
Starring
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable.
Lauren Bacall.
And Marilyn Monroe. There you go. So I'm going to read a quick synopsis before we get into it, and I'm going to do my best to read it and not sound robotic.
Well, it's not the robotic. I'm going to read it my best and not sound robotic. Like, you just talk so fast. You're like at the end of Terms and Conditions May Apply. Blah, blah, blah. You read so fast.
Well, that's how I read, so I forget.
That is not how I read. I read Terms and Conditions May Apply.
No.
I do. That's why it's tedious for me to read. That's why I needed a break, and we're doing all movies.
Yeah. All right, so this comes from commonsensemedia.org. And
that's funny.
That's what it is.
Common Sense Media is like the site that Christian parents go to.
Is it?
To determine whether like Harry Potter is safe for their kids to watch.
No way.
Yeah, and whether like the devil has anything to do with the movie being made, which of course they all do.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. Do you want me to not do this one then?
No, it's a good synopsis.
Oh, talk to your kids about it. Yeah, look at that.
I mean, I exaggerate, and I'm sorry if I offended you. Whatever.
As she rolls her eyes because she really doesn't care if she offended you.
Exactly.
Okay. Three young women friends, Lauren Bacall, Betty Grable, and Marilyn Monroe, decide that their best chance to meet rich, eligible bachelors will come if they live where the wealthy live. So they scrape together every penny they have to pay first and last month's rent on a luxurious Manhattan apartment, which serves as their home base of operations. But landing a millionaire doesn't happen overnight, and soon they'll be forced to sell off all the apartment's furnishings to maintain their lifestyle. As the apartment empties and they're reduced to folding chairs and camping cots, they of course find themselves falling for guys without a penny to their names. Will their hearts be able to resist?
Good job reading slowly.
Well, I liked this movie. I thought it was, what'd you say? It's like the gold standard of cute movies.
Yes.
It is. It's funny, but it's entertaining. It's all around entertaining.
I think this movie, I was reading on Rotten Tomatoes, it got like an 85% critic score, but a lot of those ratings were 3 out of 5 stars, and I get it. I think this is the movie that finally, you know, if you've been listening for a while, you know me, and I am not one of those people who don't like to yuck other people's yums. Like, if a book is shittily written, I don't think anyone should like it. And I know that's not very popular. And, you know, don't pay attention to me. Like what you like. It's just my opinion that we should herald the very well-written books in any genre. And we should try not to pay too much attention to the poorly written, because you'll find great stories in the well-written that you don't need to, like, consume a daily romance novel to get that hit of a good hero. Like, if the writing is shitty, like, just if you read a better book and you, like, totally absorb into good writing, then you don't need as many hits, because the quality of the drug will be so much far superior.
We do not condone drug use.
No. Well, I don't not condone it. Do what you want. I'm not gonna yuck that yum. Like,
I don't know what that means.
Okay, so like I like mushrooms.
When you shit on something people like?
Yeah, like I like fish. You don't sit there like my mom does and be like, that's disgusting. Are you really going to eat that? Like, that smells awful. Did you cook eggs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yucking someone's yum. So if somebody really, and usually it's meant like in a trope, like, I want blue alien dicks in my romance. Like, fine, have at it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do that with, like any trope you want. Like, that's great that you love that. Like, my yum is like words put together in a way that I didn't see coming. Or, you know, when you start a book, when a book is like, yeah, I don't care what trope it is. Like, I don't need a blue alien dick in my romance. I like humans, and I will never read a shifter romance because that's not my thing. That's not the yum for other people that I want to yuck.
Just bad writing in general.
I want to yuck, yes, totally unthoughtful writing. Like, as I was tucking the comforter into my headboard, like, wait, what did you even think about the phrase that you wrote down there? Is that,
did you just make that up or did you actually
read that? No, I read that. It's in a very popular series right now. I get that, you know, the story might be good and you have the hots for the hero, but you start out with that phrase, like tucking your comforter into your headboard. Like, maybe you have some kind of weird headboard that gets...
Yeah, something from IKEA.
I can't even think of, like, I don't know. I picture something from, like, Star Trek that has, where there's, like, a machine with things that tuck things.
Or the fifth but element, just, like, the saran wrap bed.
Yes, that's exactly it. But you don't tuck things into the headboard. You tuck your sheets in. You might fold your, I don't know, you might fold your comforter back, but you don't tuck your sheets into a headboard. That's not how bed making works.
No.
And the fact that you're an author with a very successful, wildly popular series, and you start with like a shitty description that makes no sense. That's what I want to yuck.
Okay.
It's the writing, not the trope.
So how does that tie into this?
This is finally the piece of media that I can see why there would be division.
Okay. Like, why?
I think usually when I like something, it's totally invalid that you not like it. And I will tell you exactly why. Here are the reasons why. You like this or you don't know what good is. or in the reverse of that, I don't like this because of this.
And if you,
you shouldn't give the author, you shouldn't give the filmmaker any credit. You shouldn't give them a dime more. You shouldn't like read a single other page because they wrote this shitty paragraph about tucking your sheets into your headboard. And like, so therefore, you should read something better.
Okay.
You should stop wasting time. This, if you don't like this, fine. There's reasons for people not to like this movie. And there's very few things that I will say that about. Either something has merit or it doesn't. This is kind of in between. I get why people would think this doesn't have merit. I think it has merit for reasons we're going to discuss. But I also see this is a really fluffy, silly movie. And if you are not...
If you're not into silly.
If you're not into silly, if you're not into the 50s, if you're not into women's stories, if you... There's a... I don't see this as, you know... This movie, I mean, it's about gold digging.
Yeah.
Like, unavoidably about gold digging. And the women are rewarded for it at the end. Like, that, if you take that, I can totally see why you would not like this film.
I took that, and I still liked it.
Yeah.
The moral of the story for me was that.
Yeah.
And I still ended up liking it. Not unlike the other movie we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Not Leap Year, the other one that the same Maid of Honor.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How the moral of his story was do whatever you want. You still get what you want at the end.
Yeah.
And I hated that movie for it.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is the same and I didn't hate it.
Well.
Because the rest of the movie is good.
Because Nunnally Johnson wrote the screenplay and he can turn a phrase. And so this sort of goes along with, like, I don't care about plot. I don't care about characters. I don't care about tropes. I don't care about relationships. Like, you can write about whatever crappy thing you want. But if you can turn a phrase, I would love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very witty movie. I really liked it.
And so I think that's number one. Like, there's so many lines in this.
Yeah.
And they're delivered so perfectly. So this is a blend of casting and screenplay. And casting, in this case, casting / scenery, because the women are sort of cast. The clothes in this movie, like the apartment.
Yeah.
The people themselves, the actors playing the role, you just like they you want to look at them because they're so pretty. So the actors themselves are like form the scenery. So yeah. It's a witty movie that's really pretty to look at, and the actors are very good at saying their lines.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what it's about to me, but I can see if that matters to you, you might not like this movie.
Well, I think I know what worked for you was everything you just said. The turning of the phrase and just the optics of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I do love any movie that has a fashion show in it.
And a huge orchestra to open. I'm kidding.
Yeah, this was excessively long. Well, I do like
it. At the beginning of this movie, there's a huge orchestra piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what'd you say, like 14 to 16 violins?
And... There were, I think, yeah, something like that. Just
and
the
it was
violins.
A legit like 6 minute.
Set. It was eight.
8 minutes.
8 minutes of just you watching the orchestra play.
But you said you don't know why that was in there, and I made the point.
Yeah.
In the 50s, probably not everyone could get to the orchestra.
Right.
Like in Lincoln, no offense if you're in Lincoln, Nebraska or from there, you might have had an orchestra. I don't know. But for example, Champaign, Illinois, Lincoln, Nebraska, anywhere, Oklahoma. I can't imagine there was a lot of opportunities to get to the orchestra in the 50s. So they brought the orchestra to them in their movie.
Even if you live in the city, you don't go to the orchestra a whole lot unless you are that type of person.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm that type of person. If I was like super wealthy, I'd be like, I'd have a ticket to everything.
Well,
however... My orchestra on YouTube, and this is, you know, they didn't have YouTube.
We were super wealthy in New York. You would not be going to the orchestra every night.
No.
Maybe in the summer.
Why? Oh, because you'd be
Rangers season tickets.
Well, yes, but we'd have tickets to the Met. We'd have tickets to Lincoln Center. We'd have tickets to the ballet.
I have Rangers season tickets. When they play the Islanders, I would go to see them there. When they play the Devils, I'd go to see them
but
there.
But I'm okay going by myself, so I really would go on a Tuesday night, or like the Thursday morning coffee the coffee concerts that they have.
Although Madison Square Garden is an awful place to watch a hockey game.
Sorry.
What worked for me? Are you still going on what worked for you?
Well, just that you mentioned the orchestra.
That didn't work for me. I just mentioned it, that it was in there.
But why were we mentioning it for what worked for me?
I made a joke that it works for
the
you.
The orchestra. Yeah. The orchestra was like when you're still sitting down, you're getting your coat out, you're getting your popcorn, you're getting situated. So I think.
But now we have coming attractions, which you don't want to miss either.
Right. What else was I saying?
Well, I said...
Oh, the orchestra in the opening of the movie, which was excessive, but I appreciated it. You know, it gives people jobs.
Yeah, you did say that.
Movie orchestras are a lot smaller now. Movie score orchestras. And they don't get screen time.
No.
You don't expect to see the musicians on stage when you sit down to watch your movie. But sometimes, back in the day... That's what would happen. I mean, if you watch Gone with the Wind, a lot of like Ben-Hur, Lawrence of Arabia, there was always like an overture and then an entr'acte. And then, you know, when the credits roll, there was, you know, music again. But they put their pauses into the movie. So, and I think it just set up, I'm about to have this experience.
Yeah. And piggybacking off of that, that's what worked for me, was having a glimpse into like how things used to be and how you mentioned everything was an experience. Travel was an experience. Yeah. Going shopping was an experience. Going out to dinner was an experience.
That's another reason. I think that's the most thing. That is the number one thing.
Yeah.
There we go. It's the number one thing that works for me. It's like it's that slice of... rich white people's life in New York City in 1953.
Yeah.
Which is the heyday of human existence.
Yeah. But I don't know. Everyone who could get onto a plane dressed up. If you went on a train that wasn't the subway.
Yeah, but plane travel was very expensive.
Yeah. And it's not anymore.
No.
Because of... I think... It's a couple factors. And if I'm wrong, feel free to email us at the show at forcedproximity.com. It's
forcedproximitypodcast@gmail.com.
It's a combination of like more airlines and like government regulation saying like you can't just charge this much money for it's not worth that.
I don't know. But I like the idea of getting, I mean, it's a pain in the butt now to get undressed, like halfway through your travels.
And that's why people wear slides with socks and sweats and athleisure.
Right.
And they want to be I'm going to be on a tiny ass chair. I might as well wear comfortable clothes.
Yeah.
That I can move around easy. Because if I got to scratch something. And I'm wearing skinny jeans. That's not going to happen. And I'm going to be tortured.
Yeah.
For the whole flight.
Well.
Well, and you said how Nordstrom is like the last holdout.
Yeah.
Of.
Okay. This is an average middle-aged, middle-income woman's idea of what stores used to be. And Nordstrom still does it, a little bit of it. You know, it used to be, if you watch any of these old black and white movies and people are bustling and shopping, and I love it because it's always like down a busy main street, mm-hmm. and they walk from shop to shop. They go to the drugstore and they go to the millinery and they go to the notions counter. And the salespeople, there's so many people there. And it would be a nightmare in reality, but I love watching it on the silver screen. And then they do their shopping, and the salespeople, like, even if it's a spool of thread, they like bring it out on like this little velvet pad, and then it gets chosen, and then they box it up for you. And they say, would you like that wrapped? And of course you want it wrapped. So they put it in a box with a little string handle so you can carry your package with you and on to your next, you know, your next outing at the automat probably is where you're going next. I'll talk about that later. Yeah, Nordstrom kind of still does that. I'm sure if you're shopping at like Gucci or, you know, Manolo Blahnik, they're doing that as well. But I don't shop at those places.
I didn't buy anything when I was at Harrods. But I'm sure they do it there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but Nordstrom still, like, they'll put it in, they have nice shopping bags, they put it in the shopping bag for you, they wrap it up in the tissue paper, they put a sticker on it,
mm-hmm.
and then they walk it around the counter to you, and it doesn't cost any more. I mean, they're, like, more luxurious items than Macy's, but it doesn't cost any more, like, at Nordstrom than, you know, if you bought something at Amazon, if they sell the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, they still provide that old school experience.
Yeah.
A little bit of it. There's a taste of it there. I love watching movies where you get to see that. And you get to see, like, this rich guy goes shopping by having the models wear the clothes for him.
I'm sure that wasn't normal for back then either.
I've seen a lot of shopping movies set in the 40s and 50s. And it was a wealthy thing. I think I think the shop managers knew who you were, and they would put on this show for you. But then also, look at how many jobs these people had. Look at how many jobs this, like, the experience created. All these women, the three women in this movie are models, and part of their modeling duty is to put on, you know, go to their version of Nordstrom, whatever it was, and put on the clothes for somebody else to look at and parade around. Like, that was a job that doesn't exist now.
No.
There's so many jobs that don't exist now because of the experience. So I really like seeing the movie for these.
That worked for you in the movie.
Yeah, there's I mentioned the automat, and the automat was like an old school cafeteria.
Yeah,
where people, like business people, would eat, and you see it in That Touch of Mink, which is a Doris Day, Cary Grant movie, which is so good. We're gonna watch that on the show. And she's interviewing for jobs, and her friend works at the automat. Which is this, it's a lunchroom, and you go and you put like a dime or a nickel in for every dish that you order. Mm-hmm. The closest thing today is the IKEA restaurant.
Yeah.
The restaurant inside the IKEA. And you get your tray. It's like, I mean, it's a cafeteria, but instead of them like scooping stuff on your plate. The plate is ready to go. It's in a box. And it's like you go and you pick out your fried chicken and mashed potatoes, and then you go and pick out your vegetables, and then it was put in the little box by a person working behind the counter, and then you open the door, and then your plate, your ceramic or porcelain plate, would come out, and you would have your hot food,
and they just keep refilling it,
and that was fast food.
Yeah.
They would, the people working behind the counter would would be refilling it as fast as they could because these people were busy on their lunch breaks in the city.
So you probably needed a lot of people to man that operation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, what a nicer experience, like, to go and get, like, basically it was what a home-cooked meal was instead of a burger and fries.
Yeah.
You got all the different options, whatever. I mean, meatloaf and mashed potatoes was a lot of it, probably. But you'd go and you pick out what you wanted, and it was, you know, nutritious and hot. And it was served to you on your ceramic dishes with silverware. I just think, I don't know.
They have that in Japan, don't they? But it's on the street side?
Probably. Japan's cool.
Did anything not work for you in this movie? I can say what didn't work was... I don't know. I don't know if it didn't work, because you don't have a movie without it. But them being gold diggers... But two of the three didn't end up digging any gold.
They were also the ones who didn't care. This whole scheme
is Lauren Bacall.
She decides, she rents the apartment. I don't think they all pool their money together. I think it was just her, her money. She invited Paula in, Marilyn Monroe's character, and then Paula invites Shotzi, but Shotzi only had a quarter to her name at the time. She didn't contribute anything to that apartment. But the other two, Paula and...
Loco.
So Shotzi's like, you know, the head, the mind.
Yeah.
The brains.
She's the brains of the operation.
And she comes and she... Marilyn Monroe... comes into the apartment and they're like, they're excited. They're going to get this done. They call Loco. And then they explain to Loco, and Paula is also an airhead. So she's still getting explained to her. But they're just along for the ride. Shotzi's the one who is like, this is what we're going to do. Like, wouldn't you rather marry a rich man? And she lays down all of her logic. Like, she's been burned. She keeps falling in love with these poor guys. And then the last guy, the one that she married, was like, she said he didn't do a lick of work after they got married. Like, he just, so she's burned. So she decides, you know, she's beautiful enough to offer a rich man the thing that he wants.
Yeah.
Like, she can get what she wants out of it too. And the other girls are like, cool, I'd rather marry rich too. But they don't really care.
They don't.
They're like, yeah, this is a good plan. I'm down with this.
I hope it works out for you.
Yeah. And it's kind of just an excuse for them to just have fun. But they're just along for anything, I think, these two other characters.
Yeah. I don't think anything really didn't work. It was a good movie. Like, if you don't like silly, that's not going to work for you.
It's not.
But it's not that silly. It's not like Jim Carrey silly.
No. It's not serious.
No.
But it's.
You know what it was?
What?
It knew what it was.
Definitely.
It knows what it is. Unlike Leap Year, this movie does not have an identity crisis.
Yes.
It knows what it is and it leans into it, and that's why it's great.
Yeah.
So how well was the world built? I think we answered that in what worked.
Well, they actually filmed this in an apartment in New York.
Did they? Because the backdrop was bad.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to the
sky.
Backdrop.
I did.
When they were on the balcony.
Yeah.
Well, the apartment was real.
And I'm sure the balcony probably had to be in a studio, because good luck filming outside in New York. And honking and yeah.
Yeah.
So that probably had to be in a studio.
Yeah.
For it to work.
But
the apartment scenes, yeah, I believe that was probably a real apartment.
I think the actors make the world too. And I think this movie wouldn't work without Lauren Bacall. I'm not a huge Lauren Bacall fan, but I think she's also part of the reason.
Was she the one in my crossword?
Yes.
Yeah. Did that give you the idea?
No.
Oh, it just happened?
Yeah. But there is a great line. The crossword was something about like Lauren Bacall's partner.
Yeah.
And then the answer was Bogey. So, yeah, she's paired with Humphrey Bogart, who is a whole lot older than her. So, real life age gap romance here. Although she doesn't strike me as ever looking 25.
Like, was she really 25 in that movie?
She's really young. She just always looked old. She's one of those people. She has like an old, wise face. And she was described as truculent. And I.
Truculent? What is truculent?
Okay, so I had to look this up to. I'm really glad I looked it up because I kind of knew what it meant. Like I could use it, but I didn't know how. This is how you define truculent.
Okay, here we go.
Aggressively self-assertive, belligerent, scathingly harsh, as in vitriolic truculent criticism, i.e. forced proximity. Feeling or displaying ferocity, cruel, and savage.
So are you truculent?
Yeah, sometimes when I don't like something, I get pretty truculent about it.
I wouldn't say that I'm truculent.
No, you're not. I think you let people live their lives just fine, where I'm like, no, you can live your lives, but don't like this piece of media. yeah, but Lauren Bacall is, I don't think she was all that, but I think she was definitely hardened. I think she was
a woman scorned.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. She was determined, like, this is not going to happen to me again. And until it does.
So she went bear hunting.
She went what?
Bear hunting?
Yes.
And she's the only one who married Rich.
Right.
Which is a good segue into my favorite part.
Okay.
At the diner at the very
that
end.
That is my favorite part, too.
When they're joking about how much money they have.
So,
and then her husband, who thinks she...
Yeah, we have to set this up better, though, because she...
I was
she
going has to. The,
okay.
She thinks she married a gas jockey. So someone who just pumps gas at the gas station, which, unless you live in New Jersey, you don't know what that is, probably. A gas station attendant. Just
I think everybody used to know. Like, everybody is
maybe
aware that gas pump jockeys used to.
If we have Gen Z listeners, which you probably don't, but if we have Gen Z listeners, they don't know what that is. If you have young millennials, they don't know what that is.
Can you imagine they used to wear uniforms?
Like, yeah.
This is more jobs lost.
They would fill your gas, check your tire pressure,
check your oil,
and refill your fluids.
My grandparents used to go to the self-service gas pumps.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Like, with me. Not even, like, before
the
I was born.
The full service, you mean?
Yeah. What
is
did
it
I say?
Self-service?
Oh, I meant full service. Yeah. It meant you had to look on the gas station when you were driving in, full service or self-service. Yep. If it was full service, somebody would come and do all that.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was
I remember
my childhood.
Filling up my gas tank at places that were full and self.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the signs were just left there from a bygone era, but it was there. Now they're all self-service. It's just we don't take the signs down. But so Lauren Bacall thinks she married a gas jockey.
Because it's just her, like, that's
her prejudice, really, because of how he dressed and how he acted.
Yeah.
And his
but
New
I love
York
that
accent.
she has like a name for this type of person that she always attracts. She always ends up attracted to. She just like she knows they're not all gas pump jockeys, but that's just what they all are. They might as well be all gas pump jockeys.
And her prejudice of how he dressed, how he spoke,
no necktie,
and just the way he looked.
Yeah,
she figured he's not worth.
And the fact that Loco met him at the cold cuts counter.
Yep. And he bought her like 2 weeks worth of groceries for those three.
I know.
But so she marries him anyway, and she stands up at the altar, not really an altar, but at there was no altar. The wedding was in the apartment.
The wedding, yeah.
So leaves her soon or her to be husband.
Yeah, because she does eventually meet a cattle baron. who's played by William Powell, who's another stellar performance.
Yes.
Who really helped make this movie. If it wasn't William Powell, like, this movie, I think, would not work so well.
And he was worth $30 million, $20
million? Yeah, something like that.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
As a rancher.
Yeah, but he's older, and he was exactly what she wanted. And they said, like, Loco asks her, don't you think he's a little old? And there's a famous line that Lauren Bacall says, like, wealthy men are never a little old. She doesn't care.
Wealthy
she wants
men
her,
are never too old. Is that
she
what
wants
is?
Her money. And it, you know, they show her, you know, daydreaming about this wealth that she's going to have. I don't buy it either. Maybe that's another reason why her gold digging scheme doesn't bother me so much. This is not a woman who would be appeased with just diamond bracelets. This is not why she wants wealth. She wants wealth for security. Like, so she doesn't have to sell her furniture. She's a model. She's has a job, but she's not making a whole lot of money. And she wants security. And I think... So what? So many of us want security. And this is not a time and an age when women could just as easily as men just decide willy-nilly to go and build a ton of wealth. You have to kind of look into it. Or you have to invent something brilliant and market the hell out of it.
I worked with a lady whose mom was, I guess, a secretary.
Yeah.
In New York City in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys she worked with or for, worked under,
mm-hmm.
would make her give them like a quarter of her paycheck.
Yeah.
And invest it for her.
Wow.
And turned her into a multimillionaire.
That's a story you never hear. I love it. I need a romance novel based on that.
Yeah. And like she became super wealthy.
That's awesome. I love that.
But she couldn't, she didn't like, didn't do it on her own.
Yeah. Because she probably needed a husband to sign off on something. Yeah.
And she did. She had a husband.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, we'll just take a quarter of your paycheck. And like, no one will know.
I love that. I love that because it's like super domineering, but also like, it's like, I like it when dominance is done for the better of the...
for the subjugated.
Yes.
Well, wouldn't that be like...
That's why I hear something like that and I go, romance.
Isn't that like a benevolent ruler, what they would do?
Yeah, but you have to like... you have to be a little bit forceful at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So she... Lauren Bacall, back on track. Lauren Bacall thinks... She's going to marry. She leaves a guy at the altar who's a cattle rancher who's worth $20 million. And she's in love with the gas jockey.
Yeah.
But the guy, what's his name?
William.
But the.
J.D. Hanley.
J.D. Hanley knows.
He knows the gas pump jockey.
He knows the gas pump jockey, but doesn't tell her who he really is. And he's like, he owns cattle, oil, railways, like everything you can think you can. You can own in the 50s. He owns it. It's like Monopoly.
He's like Rockefeller.
Yes. Yeah, he is. So he gives her his blessing and everything. Not really. Not that she gives a shit about that, but he gets it.
Her intended immediately becomes this like father advice giver figure.
And that was also probably my second favorite part.
Yeah.
My second favorite movie.
Favorite part in the movie.
In the movie. There you go. Two sentences combined into one. Because he said with age, you just learn to
live with like, disappointment.
He's like, no, this hurts, but I'll get over it. That's what's a great thing about age. You learn how to deal with disappointment because it constantly happens.
Yeah.
So she ends up marrying
the gas pump
the
jockey.
The gas pump jockey. The same day, at that same wedding, I would imagine. Because why not? So they all go out.
To the Greasy Spoon. I love this.
Yep. They're belly to the bar.
Yep.
And
it's the three women and the men that they've married.
And they start joking about how much their men are worth. And the two men who are worth nothing, like, just start throwing out numbers and joking around. And then...
No, they don't. The one guy who's a forest ranger, he's like, oh, I'm worth about, you know,
$14. Yeah, something like that.
And then the other guy is like, well, if I can get my hands on it.
And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the guy in the middle, what's his name?
Tom Brookman.
Tom Brookman says, I'm worth about $200 million. They're like, oh, yeah, how's that? Give or take a mil. I'm like, how is that? And he starts like spouting off all the things he owns.
Some oil, and some cattle.
No one believes him. And then he pulls out a wad of $1,000 notes.
Another moment in time that doesn't exist.
Imagine if you lost one of those.
Where did he even put that? There's not a pocket big enough for his like softball size roll of thousands.
So he pays for their dinner at the Greasy Spoon with a $1,000 bill, tells the guy to keep the change, and then you hear thud, thud, thud. The camera pans up from the $1,000 bill on the counter, and all the women have fainted.
Yeah. Oh, and then the men are all like, the two men who are poor are just fine with it. And I love that they treat him like they're not awed by him at all. I love that. They just toast to their wives.
Yep.
With I love it.
Big ass beers.
With beer. This is also like, I think this movie also is the reason why I think like when we watch 50s movies, we have to eat hot dogs and potato chips and beer because I feel like that is all people ate in the 50s. Like that's even in like the movie now Voyager, which is a 40s movie, they eat hot dogs and potato chips because they have a weenie roast in their mansion.
That's like, my third favorite.
That's what people are watching. I always crave hot dogs and potato chips and beer in a glass.
My third favorite scene in this movie is the dream sequence.
Yeah.
When Lauren Bacall's dream about the diamonds.
Marilyn Monroe's
dream about getting rubies and riches in her trip to Arabia.
Yes.
Because that's what you called it back then. And Betty Grable is dreaming about hot dogs and beer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
Hero and heroine, I think that does not apply to this one. We've talked about all of them.
Well, we didn't.
Well, we can talk about the other husbands.
Yeah.
So Marilyn Monroe's husband is, I don't know if I believe him.
I believe him.
He's on the run from the IRS.
I think he's I feel like he's too down to earth.
But he owns the apartment.
Yeah.
That's what we have to talk about.
Yes.
And you know he has to have money somewhere if he owns that apartment. I don't care if it's 53. That's expensive.
Yeah.
It's a huge apartment in New York City.
Yes.
With a view that people would, I legit kill each other for.
Yeah.
So he must have money somewhere. So he's on the run for the IRS because his accountant, like,
stole money.
Schitt's Creek him, basically.
Yes, exactly.
And like was supposed to, Schitt's Creek and It's a Wonderful Life combined. He was supposed to pay the taxes, but he cashed a check and kept it for himself.
The accountant did.
The accountant did.
Yes.
Where the uncle was supposed to bring the check to the Potters and he lost
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
So he's like scrambling to liquidate some money.
And he's like flying all over. I love how he meets Marilyn Monroe on the flight
and she
the flight to Atlantic City. But the first stop on this flight was Kansas City. She says later when she's like, I was on the plane to Kansas City, and Lauren McCall says, I thought you were going to Atlantic City, and she says, well, I was, but the first stop on this flight was Kansas City. And Lauren McCall's just like, Oh, whatever. You're so dumb.
Well, Marilyn Monroe can't see.
Yeah.
She's, I'm imagining a lot like my eyesight.
Yeah, I was imagining her eyes to be like yours.
And like, if I don't have contacts or glasses, I can't see shit. So she refuses to wear her glasses. And I don't think contacts are a thing yet. No. Or maybe the early stages.
They're not normal.
I doubt it. Yes.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to wear glasses because
men don't make passes at women who or girls who wear glasses.
Which she looks great in her glasses.
Yeah. She's Marilyn Monroe. And then there's that line when she puts them on. And she said, "You don't think I look like an old maid?"
Yeah.
There has never been anyone who reminded me of an old maid less than you. That's another, like, wink to the audience.
Yeah.
Because it's Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm. So she's a little ditzy, and she can't see, and she refuses to wear glasses. So mm-hmm. that's her character. And she stumbles into, like, the love of her life on the plane, who just, like, encourages her to wear her glasses, because, duh. Have you not been hit by a car?
Yeah.
Betty Grable is...
She's
Loco.
The real dum-dum of this movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
And she constantly puts her foot in her mouth.
Yeah.
I'll let you take this one.
Okay, so Betty Grable is... They all meet their guys. When they meet J.D. Hanley, Lauren Bacall's millionaire, he invites them all... Like, oh, I'm not going to be in town for a while. However, why don't you come with me to the oil baron convention?
Because it probably was a thing back then.
And it's like, cha-ching, cha-ching, yeah. Cha-ching. So then they all meet their millionaires there. Marilyn Monroe ends up with like a sheik from Arabia, I'm saying with quotes.
Yeah.
With an eye patch. And she thinks he's... he's super suave and sweeps her off her feet, which could have been anybody who was talking about millions just because she was basically told she should like millionaires. You don't really buy that she's in it for herself. You buy that she's been told to do this, so she does it.
Mm-hmm.
So she ends up with Stuart with the eye patch. And then... Betty Grable ends up immediately with like married man who is a total drag and talks about his wife, complains about his wife. And she's just like, just give me a free dinner. Let's get out. Like, I'm here for the food. And then he starts talking about his lodge in Maine. So she's like, I love lodges.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you do? You want to go to mine? And she's like, well, yeah. And so she goes up to Maine with him, and he's like, he's a dick that you love to hate because he's so cocky and he has not a lot of reason to be.
Yeah.
Looks wise. I mean, he's rich, but he's married, so he's worthless. And he's like, he's nasty. He's a nasty person. And he, you know, every move he makes, he keeps telling her how smart he was, like, to have thought of this ploy. So she goes up to the lodge, and you're thinking right now, why would she go to a lodge with this married man? That's not the name of the game. The game is marriage. And as Lauren Bacall says earlier in the movie, if you don't marry them, like... They've snagged you.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the case. I feel like that stands the test of time, that statement right there. And so she's going up to the lodge in Maine. She gets in there and it is a lodge in Maine. And she's like, where are the other members?
She thought it was an Elks Lodge.
She thought it was an Elks Lodge. And there were going to be thousands of other people there. And so she'd meet someone better, drop this guy, and like go off with him. But she does end up meeting the forest ranger.
Is that
ranger.
What her plan was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why she was so like pissed off about it.
Yes. She's like, but this really is a lodge.
Yeah, it's just a cabin. A beautiful cabin, I thought.
And she thought it was an Elks Lodge or, you know, I don't know what the other Lions Club or something like that. One of those joiner things from the 50s.
Yeah.
But luckily there's this handsome forest ranger there and they end up falling in love because she gets sick, too sick to leave. She gets the measles. And then the rich dude gets the measles. And while he's having the measles, she's like skiing on snow instead of water, like the normal way.
Yeah.
And she's having the time of her life with Forest Ranger and they end up falling in love. So he's a Forest Ranger and he has a total of $14 to his name, mm-hmm. but they live happily ever after. So those are the two guys. And then they come back, they both come back to the wedding on the day of the wedding. So they both come back to the apartment to bring their husbands. Like, hey, we've got married, and no, it wasn't part of the plan, but I love him, and that was more important. Mm-hmm. And Lauren Bacall's like, well, I want love. I think it would have been fine. I think she would have married the J.D. Hanley, the rich guy, if she hadn't met and fallen in love and with Tom Brookman.
Would have been happy, because he was a nice guy.
Yeah, they would have been a fine couple. But she met the gas pump jockey.
Yep.
And now she knows love.
And I'd imagine there's going to be some business dealings between her would-be husband, her actual husband.
Yeah.
So. All right. Who was your favorite character? Tough one, huh?
Yeah. Marilyn Monroe is like just so adorable in this. Like, I don't even think, like, it's not, it's like she has, I mean, I can't, they've written books about why she is such a star and I can't reiterate those in this podcast, but she's like just this weird blend of like sexy but so innocent and funny and dumb, but she says smart things like that will never happen again. There will never be another person like her, and people that try to act like her don't. There are other dumb blondes, like Betty Grable in this is the ultimate dumb blonde, and she and Marilyn were friends, and you see them like they're two vastly different characters. You've got two dumb blondes. And one review of this movie that I read, it was like, how do you have two Marilyn Monroes playing against each other? But they're not. They're very, nobody is like Marilyn Monroe. And Betty Grable, like, she was, like, what famously happened while they were making this movie is, like, she passed the torch to Marilyn because Betty Grable was the Marilyn Monroe of the 40s. Like, she was the big pinup star in World War II, whose picture was carried by every GI when he went into battle. But she said, I've had my chance. Like, this is your chance. So you go get him. Like, this is your time to shine. But Betty Grable also shined.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't help it. I really also love Lauren Bacall's character because she was just, I don't see her as entirely a gold digger. I see her as somebody who's been hardened and like something is like her heart is calcifying and she is now doing what she needs to do to get hers. And also, she just had the best lines.
She did. I'll go a little different. Mm-hmm. My favorite of the husbands was the park ranger, because that seems like a cool job.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
I thought he'd be too, like, sappy for you.
Well, his job was the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had his job with Brookman's money, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning I wouldn't have a job. I would just walk around my own
trees.
Yeah. I'm going to go with J.D. Hanley.
Okay, I thought you would say Tom Brookman.
Tom Brookman was cool. I liked him, but I don't know. I just like the way he got dealt this huge blow.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, I'm going to help you out.
Yeah.
He's meaning, I don't think he really loved her. I think he liked her a lot and thought she was cool. And I'm a widower. You're in a tight spot. I can make your life way easier.
Yeah.
And you're you're someone who's worth making their life easier, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do this because I'm, why not?
Yeah.
So I don't think he actually loved her.
I don't think he knew her well enough to love her because she was always playing some other. I think if she was her real self to him, he would have.
Yeah.
I think he would have really admired her intelligence and her wit.
I think he did, though. And that's why
you think he saw through all that?
Yes.
Because
the kitchen scene.
Yeah.
When he asked for milk and all she had was water.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, where's your furniture? Did you hawk it or sell it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't believe her.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'll buy it all back for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he would have been more of a father figure to her, I think, in a weird way. But, and the ending let him be.
Yeah.
And not make it creepy.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. And so he was my favorite.
I think you would like William Powell in anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is he always like that?
Yeah.
All right.
And he's like a major hero in his own movies.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Last question. Does this movie stand the test of time? Now, if you're talking to us, obviously we're going to say yes, but take you and me out of the equation. Do you think it does?
I don't think it's universal. I don't think you could. I don't know that you could remake this movie today and it would be liked. I think you could remake it and totally vilify these women. But I don't think you could take the script, insert it into a different time period and it would work.
Yeah.
But I think it does stand the test of time as a moment in history.
I agree with that.
I see most movies, so I should always preface my answer with that. Yeah, I think as a piece of here's what 1953 looked like. Yes, I think it does. And I think the wit always, I mean, the jokes in this movie work.
Yeah. And the men weren't bad. Those guys would have been okay now.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't toxic. They weren't what you think of.
Except for Stewart, and they really downplayed that. And we got Marilyn Monroe naturally avoided that toxicity that could have happened with him.
Stewart, was that the one-eyed guy?
The eye patch guy, because he was trying to play her.
Yeah.
But we didn't get that because she immediately diverted.
But he wasn't a hero. Yeah, no, he wasn't a hero. The heroes were all really good guys.
Yeah.
They would have been heroes today, too.
Brookman, there was a little flash when he was, super angry. Why show up and hit the wedding of the woman that you love getting drunk?
Well, they had to.
He had to be there. I know.
For it to work. He wouldn't have been there in real life, even in 1953. There would have been have to be some grand gesture where she had to go get him.
Yeah.
That would have been the difference.
And I think that's what makes this movie light.
Yeah.
And
he just happens to be
yeah.
How convenient.
The fact that you didn't have a big grand gesture scene and it didn't turn into this dramatic moment. That's what keeps this movie light. But we don't want that in this movie.
You wanted her to go get him?
No. We want exactly what we got.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
We wanted Tom Brookman to be there at her wedding, getting drunk and a little, belligerent. But
still didn't ruin it.
No.
He didn't go all jam on them, Jeremy Jam.
What's that?
Parks and Rec.
Oh, I don't know about that.
When he threw stink bombs at their wedding. Got drunk and belligerent and threw stink bombs.
Oh.
Got jammed. All right. Well, that was a fun movie to watch. Next week, I don't know. We kind of decided to watch this one right before we watched it. So I think that's probably going
to
happen again.
Yeah, next week. I needed to watch like a happy movie. And this is a happy movie to me.
Yeah.
This is my version of that.
Yeah.
We still need to watch Roman Holiday. So
maybe
we'll watch Roman Holiday.
That might be a summertime one.
Why? You think you can't do it?
We'll see. No, I think it'll fit better in the summer. And I.
It's Rome.
I'd like to do a more modern movie because we've done.
Okay.
Just because we've done two.
I think we did three old ones or four.
Have we?
This March. Yeah. Because that was the original concept for March. Yeah.
Well, no, because we did leap year.
Right. That threw a wrench in our plot.
Anyway, we'll decide and we'll get back to you next week. Have a great week and we'll talk to you later. Bye.